You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
We are here today to talk about something that means the world to us, and that is Voyager. Oh, wait, we talk about that every week.
You know, you were really channeling your inner Shatner there at the start there. I really enjoyed that.
I was in a play one time. It was The Crucible. It was my first big play was The Crucible, and I played Reverend Hale. And a buddy of mine, who's a very good actor and has actually gone on to study deep dramaturgy, he took me aside one time. Like, I was having an existential crisis, and he took me aside, and he said, he's like, Tristan, you know what? This would be an insult to anybody else, but I really do feel like you would take it as a compliment, and I feel like your acting style is a mixture of Christopher Walken, Charlton Heston, and William Shatner. And I turned to him and I go, thank you.
Heck yes, yes, yes. That is a compliment.
It is a huge compliment to me. I know a lot of people don't like those acting styles of those people, but I was just like, hey, thank you so much.
No, it takes a certain kind of personality to make that sort of thing work, but you can do it.
Well, thank you very
much. You just
much,
did. But... I wish our listeners could have seen the video, because that would have just enhanced the proof there. But trust me, it was gold.
Well, another thing that's gold is this listing episode. And that's right. What this episode is today is a listing episode. We're picking what we think are the best moments from Star Trek Season 3. Our top five moments in no particular order. And
yeah,
we love doing our top five lists, don't we?
We love our top five lists. Yes, we do them very frequently. And in this series, we are focused on season 3 of Voyager. And I don't know about you, but I actually could have spawned so many lists from this list. It was very difficult to come up with just five top moments because, as I was telling you on the other side of the mess hall, season 3 is just rife with relationshiper moments for Janeway and Chakotay. Like, this was it. This was the season. And I could have come up with top five Janeway Chakotay moments, and I almost did. I really wanted to, and then I just thought, no, there's some listeners who just don't dig that, and I can't go there. Maybe that's another show. We'll see.
You know, maybe we could do something like that. I mean, like, we could talk about the best moments between Janeway and Chakotay, the best moments between Tom and B'Elanna, the best moments between Tuvok and Neelix, you know, like, stuff like that.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that is going in the idea bank. I like that so much. Okay, but that's not what we're doing this time. We did the top five moments overall, and it was very hard to narrow it down and pick a good mix that wasn't a total state the obvious, because another thing we brought up on the other side of the mess hall was that some episodes have so many good moments, it's hard to decide which one you want to choose.
Yes, it's true. I mean, there was a series of episodes where I was like, you know what? I can't choose. And so I just moved on to a different episode. Like, is that proper thinking? Probably not.
Hey, it's our podcast. We do what we want.
We can do what we want. And I was also hoping, I was like, okay, well, if I can't pick a moment from this episode, hopefully Char did. And so that way I'll be able to live with myself.
We'll see. Because I didn't completely skirt around the really awesome, oh yeah, I love that moment. In the episodes where there's several moments, I did pick one sometimes, but then I also tried to pick stuff from episodes that might not necessarily come to mind right away that had good moments, but overall were just kind of eh.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this shapes up.
How I chose my picks for this round was really it. You know, it's not my favorite moments. It's not what I think are like my favorite episodes or anything like that. It's really just I wanted to find one moment that I felt was critical to the show. I feel like that's what I really tried to
Me
do.
Too.
I mean, there was one where I kind of fudged it, where it wasn't critical to the show, but I just liked it so much.
That's so funny. I did the same thing.
Four
wow,
out of five.
Are we sharing a brain now after 2 years of podcasting? This is getting a little scary.
It might have happened. We might have had a Tuvix situation
so sorry.
Going on. But how about let's just go right into it. So, like, tell us your first moment in no particular order. Tell us your first moment. Give us a little background of the episode and then give us your moment.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm going to kick us off with a moment from an episode called The Shoot. That is early season three.
Nice.
And this is the one where Tom and Harry are essentially prisoners, and there is a moment where Harry almost kills Tom, but he doesn't. And they're under some weird mind control because as prisoners, they are basically drawn to the edge of their sanity. I mean, they're just, it's violent, it's crazy, they feel very volatile, and that's done on purpose to try and just basically try to kill each other. And it's been a long time since I've seen this episode, so that honestly is just about all I remember, except for the little moment of dialogue that really cements the bromance. This is where I think it happens, and this is where, after all is said and done, they're back on Voyager and they're safe. Harry is feeling awful about the fact that he almost killed his friend Tom.
I almost killed you. What are you saying? You're the one that kept me alive. I was ready to hit you with the pipe. Don't you remember? You want to know what I remember? Someone saying, "This man is my friend. Nobody touches him." I'll remember that for a long time.
That did it. Tom and Harry for life.
That is a good solid moment. When I was going down my list, like what I always do is I just bring up every single episode of whatever season we're looking at in list form. I scroll through and I try to think back in my memory brain and just go, like, what are the moments that meant something to me? And The Shoot, it's episode 3 of season 3, and that was one of the first episodes that popped in my brain. I was like, this
really?
Is a great Tom and Harry episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
you know, I need to take something away from this. And I ultimately didn't, but I'm so glad that you did, because that moment, I mean, like, they were friends right off the bat and they meant something to each other right off the bat. But this was a huge character building moment. This was a very big relationship moment. And this was Harry. I mean, this was Harry coming into his own. Like, this was not about him reacting to another situation. This wasn't him piggybacking on somebody else. This was his episode, and he really, to say it again, he just really came into his own here, and so I'm so glad that you chose that moment.
Well, thank you. Yeah, like, The Shoot is not a bad episode necessarily, but I don't think it's outstanding. Like, it's not one of the very first things you think of when you think, oh, season three, oh, yeah, The Shoot, that was so good. No, not necessarily, but it's incredibly important for Tom and Harry, and I just thought, with that being such a great thing throughout the whole show, that's a really important moment.
I agree completely.
All right. So that's what I want to kick off our list with. But what about you?
Mine, I think you'll quite enjoy because it's Macrocosm.
Okay.
And it is it's episode 12 of season 3. And it's the episode where Janeway makes her way back to the Voyager crew, and everybody's incapacitated or missing, and she doesn't know what's going on. And it turns out these macroviruses have inhabited the ship and infested the ship, and they're flying around and they're dangerous. And my favorite moment from this episode is when Janeway suits up.
Oh, yeah, that is so good. She's ready.
Yeah, that's right. She decides to soldier on. It's this moment where she takes off her jacket because it's so hot. We see those rippling biceps. She puts on the backpack, you know, slides in the knife in the holster, and then pulls out a plasma rifle. And it's just like, bam, game on. And not only was this a cool, badass moment, but I felt like this was a moment where it's, you know, like, this is post basics. You know, like, this is after basics, where we already know that our captain will do what it takes to keep her crew alive. And basically she put them through, you know, rigorous things in order to make them survive. And so in Macrocosm, even when she's by herself, I felt like this was the moment where she will continually do what it takes. And she's not only just a brain and a bun of steel, she is a person who can throw, like, like throw hands just like Shatner.
It's true. Yeah, Janeway is also not afraid to put up a fight. Yes. Yeah, and I like that. Yeah, that is a great moment too. Just, you know, envisioning it, thinking about it right now. Those sweaty, rippling biceps. Janeway is ready to go. She is suited for action. And you know, take away the whole idea of the fact that she's fighting macroviruses is a little silly. It doesn't matter. She's a badass.
It doesn't matter. It's a danger. It's a danger, and she's willing to do it hand to hand. I mean, like, we have a lot of great tacticians. We have a lot of great captains who are great in battle, but they're behind a console. You know, like, they have other people helping them. They're pressing buttons. But, like there's great glory in that. But at the same time, they're, like, you can be good at that, which Janeway is, but you can also be good at when danger is right in your face.
Right, yeah, that's a very different form of combat where it's really you face-to-face on the line. Your life is critically, acutely in danger, and your foe is mere inches away from you.
Exactly. So that's why I chose that moment. So what's your number two?
Okay, the next one I want to go for is discovering the remains of a Borg at the very end of Blood Fever.
Dang it, that's my number two.
Oh, really? Okay, well, it's that good of a moment. I mean, it's so brief. You blink and you might miss it, but you knew this would eventually happen on Voyager. That's why it's so good. But the way it's executed still makes your skin crawl, you know? Mm-hmm. It's eerie, and you're like, oh boy, here it comes.
It's decomposed. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that look, Janeway and Chakotay, oh, the Borg.
Your call sounded urgent.
I think there's something you should see, Captain. We found this as we were clearing away the ruins. Undoubtedly, one of the invaders who destroyed this colony.
The Borg.
There's still excitement about the Borg at that point. And so it's so incredibly good. That's why I picked it. Why did you pick it?
Well, I picked it for the same reasons because, you know, like the moment that we heard that there was going to be a new show where they were going to be flung into the Delta Quadrant. And even if you didn't know about the show, you know, like right in Caretaker, it's like, holy crap, we're in the Delta Quadrant. We need to make our way home. Loyal fans would have realized, oh my gosh, wait, why do I know the Delta Quadrant? It's because of the Borg. We realize that the Borg is in the Delta Quadrant. Like, oh my God, we're going to get to see the Borg again. It's no longer just the TNG era or the TNG crew. Like, you know, they can do anything they want with the Borg. And they did.
Yes. And on their turf.
And so however you feel about it, whether you like it or disliked it, in that moment, there was nothing but pure hope and anticipation. And it was a beautiful thing because it was just, the reveal was great. It was creepy. It was eerie. It was jaw was just like, ah, you know, and it looked like a zombie Borg. And so they pulled a brush away and they brought Janeway down specifically to reveal this to her. And it just wouldn't think about the alternative on how Star Trek does some things where like Chakotay walks into her ready room and says, we found a Borg corpse. Dun, dun, dun. Music credits fade. It wouldn't have been a cool. Nowhere near as cool.
Mm-mm. No, this is something we had to see, and they did it just right.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing. Is like, it was a great idea. It was a great button tie onto the episode, and it was well executed. It hit all the points it needed to hit.
Right, yeah, they didn't have to drag it out at all, and I'm so glad they didn't, because that really made it intense, and the fact that it didn't have that much to do with the episode at large was totally okay because it was just a warning. You know, they're coming. It's going to happen. We're going to see this soon. We're not going to tell you when. So stay tuned. And so it kind of keeps that suspense going. I liked it a lot. Okay, well, if that's your pick as well, then I'm going on to another one, right?
That's right. Give us your number three.
Okay, let's go for maybe just as brief of a moment, but just as powerful was the teaser to Scorpion.
Ooh.
The whole, we are the Borg, you will be assimilated, and then boom, the Borg cube gets destroyed. Well, what could kill a Borg cube almost as easily as a Borg cube killing a Starfleet vessel in the massacre of Wolf 359? It's a really 30-second brief thing. And it's, as a teaser, it's so effective because you're just, oh, did that just happen? It did. Oh my God. And so that is a fantastic way to entice me to watch an episode. What do you think about this moment?
I'm with you. I'm completely with you. I mean, we've talked about this moment a lot on the show, and this was, I mean, just Voyager knows what it's doing when it comes to teasers like this, and just like the imagery that sticks with you. It they really do know how to sell you and just make it indelible in your brain. And I hate using that word, but there's just no other word for this. And it's just, you know, I loved talking about it. I love talking about it because it has so many family connections with me, because I watched Star Trek with my family, with my mom and dad. And this was one of those moments where my dad and mom were just like, what is going on? like, how are they doing this? You know, and it's just, it just works. It just absolutely works.
If you watch this during first run, you know that feeling. You just, it freaked you the heck out. I remember my dad and I, we were watching on separate TVs because I was upstairs and he was downstairs, because my bedroom, I was in my own room and he was in the living room downstairs. We were not watching it together for some reason. I don't know why. I guess I just wanted to be in my room. But I come out and, you know, we kind of meet in the kitchen, which is the halfway point in my parents' house. We're like, what in the world? Oh my God. And so, yeah, we were all freaking out. That was such a great, great moment. I wish Voyager could have always been so punchy with its moments like that. Could you just imagine if everything was so snappy? Be a very, very awesome action-packed show. All right. Well, that's my number three. What is your number three?
Well, with my third one, it's a little bit different, because this is that one out of five where I was talking about how it's not so much a great moment for the show. It's more of just a moment that I like. Okay. And it takes place in Before and After.
Okay. Good episode.
Yeah, I love that episode. I love flashing back and forth. I love Kes's travel through time. Even though Kes is my least favorite character, I love that character. You know, like, it's all, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, like, you don't hate her, but maybe if you have to rank them, maybe she means the least.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that, like, that's one thing about ranking, like, shows and ranking characters and everything like that. Like, if we were to rank everyone on Deep Space Nine, well, no, that's a bad example because I hate Ezri. But, like, if Ezri wasn't in the mix.
Tell Matt Rushing that. He's just screaming right now. How dare you, Tristan?
I know. Yeah, I think he and I have talked about it before. But just like with TNG or Voyager or TOS, I love all of those characters. I love all of them. But like, if I had to rank them, it'd be like, okay, well, yeah, Kes would be on the bottom. But it doesn't mean I don't like her. You know?
Right. There's a difference.
Yeah, there's a big difference. And it's just like with the shows. You know, like, if I ranked the shows, like, TOS would be at the bottom. And, like, people are like, how dare you? How dare you not like TOS? And how dare, like, it was the originator and everything like that. It's
so,
like,
subjective anyway. It's just your opinion. Everybody's mileage is going to vary. And so I kind of hate it when people get into those big debates over what is best. Yeah. Because that's all it is subjective. I mean, it's hard to be objective about something like that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that, like, it's all just personal preference. And, like, even with this show, with Voyager, tons of people don't like Voyager. But what I, like, and that's fine. If you feel that way, that's fine. But what I can't stand is when someone talks about how much they love a thing, and then that person who doesn't like it feels that it is their duty to inform you that your show sucks. Like, I hate the show that you're talking about.
Yeah, thanks. Your point.
yeah, exactly. What are you hoping to accomplish in this conversation?
Like, yes.
Oh, you know what? You're right. All those episodes that I love, you're right. They're just trash because you told me that they are. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. I've seen the light now. Oh, hallelujah.
So there's now more hate in my life instead of love. Thank you so much.
Yeah, because we need more negativity in the world. We don't have enough. Yeah, seriously. That's why I can't do Facebook. I cannot handle that stuff so much. Can't do it. It's
same
tough.
Here.
Anyway, all right. We digress.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we were doing a show. Yeah.
Yes.
So in Before and After, like, as I was talking about, she's jumping back and forth through time. And in this timeline, B'Elanna and Janeway are dead. And so the B'Elanna-Tom relationship never happened. And this is in the future of what our present would be watching the show. And so we see that Tom and Kes are in a relationship. They have children together, and they have grandchildren together, because Harry gets with Tom and Kes's daughter, and that's kind of weird.
Uh-huh.
But there's this one moment when all of a sudden we that flash starts to happen. It's that slow fade and that glow. It's, and like, Kes is like, oh no, it's happening again. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm leaping, you know. And then all of a sudden we see her hands in the air and she's screaming. She's like, oh my God, what is going on?
The sack is opening.
What's happening? What do you mean, what's happening? You're having a baby. Hold still.
Where am I?
Exactly where I told you not to be, on a shuttlecraft.
I have to see the doctor.
Well, it'd be nice if he were still around. I told you you were in no condition to come on a supply mission, but did you listen to me? I can see the toes. It's coming. Yes. It's a girl.
What is going on? And then Tom says, like, Tom is behind her. Uh-huh. And says, it's like, what's happening is you're having a baby. You know? And then, yeah. Like, I think then he says, it's like, I can see the toes.
Yeah. It's so cute how he says that.
Yeah. It's just like, it's just a proud father saying he can see the toes. And it's just, it's so alien. It is so alien
it is.
To us.
Yeah. Cause as we now know from Elogium, she has this sack on her back, which is the womb for an Okampan child. And then she's giving birth that way.
She gives birth that way. And so we never actually see what hunchback pregnant Kes would look like because we only see it from the front. But I try to put myself in that moment. Like, okay, you're already stressed because you're being thrown back and forth through time and you don't know what's going on. You don't know who people are. Then all of a sudden you're giving birth. Just.
Yeah, that would be a little bit of a shocker.
I can't even wrap my head around that because the entire idea of childbirth makes me just want to wince in a corner and hold myself as I rock back and forth. The idea of birth is so painful and stressful, but just think about if you had to add in surprise birth.
I have to imagine that Okampan births are just as painful and excruciating as a human birth is. And so, yeah, just doubling that intensity. Holy wow. Kes, how did your head not implode? Seriously, because wow.
Yeah, we all can't be Bajorans, and it's sad that we can't. But truth. I think that's why I chose that moment. It's not because this is an important moment to the series, but because it's alien, it's abrupt, and it's cute all at the same time.
It is. That's a good moment. I'm glad you picked that. I was trying to think of something from before and after to possibly put on my list, and I ultimately didn't choose anything. And so I'm glad you put that in there. That's a good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, what's your next one?
Okay. Well, as I said earlier in the show, I could have done relationship or moments just straight up, but I had to include one, and I thought, what is the best one? And I ultimately decided Chakotay in Coda, when he's holding Catherine, he goes, "No, Catherine, you can't die."
"Don't you die on me, Catherine."
"Chakotay, what's happening?"
"Stop breathing. Breathe, damn it, breathe. Don't do this to me, Catherine. Come on, Catherine, breathe.
Can't you hear me?
Don't you die on me. Come on, breathe. Catherine. Listen to me. You have to breathe. Start breathing. Come on. Come on." "No, Catherine. Can't die."
And why? Because it takes away any doubt that he loves her. Mm-hmm. I mean, that moment is so raw, and it makes my relationship or heart feel warm and fuzzy just thinking about it. And I mean, that whole episode is so relationshiper-esque, you know, there's so many moments like in the shuttlecraft, and then there's the end where Kathy, there's the moment in the ready room, you know, "I cheated death. How about a moonlight sail on Lake George?" And I mean, I almost picked that one, but no, that one, Chakotay holding Catherine when he thinks that she's dead, that I say, I think that has more impact on the series as a whole. And there, it's just such a genuine reaction moment. Gosh.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, I never really even thought of that as a key moment in their history, but it really is because,
yes,
I mean, whether you see this as an alternate reality or it didn't really happen, it doesn't really matter because
in Kathy's head, whatever.
Yeah, you know, like in Kathy's head, it doesn't really matter because we see the progression of that. We see like what really did happen is what happened just before that moment, and so that moment would have led into it if she actually would have died right then and there. So, I mean, it absolutely did happen, and so like with that moment, you're right, it absolutely washes it away because this is not how an XO reacts to his captain. This is how unrequited love happens. This is what happens when
Thank you. That's what it is unrequited love. Like, you don't see Sisko and Kira reacting in this way. Or Picard and Riker. No, there is definitely something else here. There's more to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because like if this happened to Sisko, like if Ben was trying to revive Kira, he would be devastated, but he wouldn't react that way. And with and like I'm trying to think of like the like anybody else in the cast, like if Chakotay did this with anybody else in the cast, whether it's Neelix, Tuvok, Kes, he would be distraught, but with like the only person I could see him doing something similar to that would be B'Elanna.
Yeah, but even that would be a different reaction.
It would be just as powerful, but it would be different. And that's the point that you're making. Mm-hmm. And that's why I completely agree with you.
Awesome. Yeah. No, you're totally right. Like, could you imagine him holding on, Neelix, you can't die. No.
No.
Please, no.
No, Tuvok, it's not your time.
Yeah. No, it only works with Catherine in this very context. Yes. Yeah. Only B'Elanna comes even close, and it just doesn't measure up to the same thing. Not in the same way at all.
Not in the same way.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was my number four. What is your number four?
My number four, it's kind of funny that like that was your number four, and my number four is also a death moment. I feel like we had to build up to it. Like, we didn't want to just start it right off the bat.
We can't start with death.
Yeah, it's not the moment between Janeway and Chakotay, but it's the moment between the doc and his holographic daughter.
Computer, continue Doctor's family program Beta Row from the last point of deactivation.
Daddy, what's gonna happen to me? When will I be able to see again?
I'm not sure. You're a very sick girl.
Am I gonna die?
Too sick to get better.
Well, I'm gonna die.
Yes.
If you stay with me, I won't be afraid.
I'll stay right here. I promise.
This was such a painful moment. Yeah, this was a heartbreaker. This was a painful moment. This was a painful moment. This was a character building moment. This was the rise of the Doctor. This was season 3 Doctor. Like, season 1 and season 2 Doctor are very different from season 3 on. Very, very different. And I feel like this was the beginning of that. Like, not the beginning of his exploration of humanity and himself, but the beginning of things are going to change. Things are not going to be different from here on out. Like, in the beginning, it was him. Yeah, he's growing as an individual and he's changing and everything like that. But this was the crux of it. This was, there's no turning back. Mm-hmm. And this moment was also well executed, well acted. The whole family was there. And even if you don't have a family, even if you don't have kids, and we've talked about this before, it got to you. It tugged at your heartstrings.
Totally.
And not only was this heartbreaking and well done, well acted, and well executed, but it was a moment that we'd forever remember, and so that's why I think it deserves to be on this list.
It's a very good moment, and I guess if I would have written down any honorable mentions, something from real life would have been it, and I'm glad that you picked this moment, just because it's got such an emotional impact. And my only wish is that the Doctor would have continued somehow with his Hollow family, like if we would have followed up instead of him just folding and walking away from the program and never really going back. But that whole tangent aside, it doesn't take away from the fact that this is so pivotal for the Doctor. It's, I can't imagine watching this if I were a parent, how much more it would just kill my insides to, you know, think about it and relate to it and just, oh God, if that were my kid, oh, how much more that would hurt, because I don't have kids and it still gets me, like you said. It's just that good.
Exactly. And I think that's all that needs to be said.
Fair enough. Okay, well, we're on the home stretch then.
So what is your final pick of the night?
Okay. Well, this is probably one of my favorite moments in all of Star Trek. That is Janeway, Chakotay, Paris, and Tuvok taking in 1996 Los Angeles in Future's End.
Well, Catherine, you got us home.
Right place, wrong time. But it is good to be back, nevertheless. Maybe I should look up a few ancestors. As I recall, one of them was a school teacher in Arizona.
I don't know what my relatives were doing this far back in history.
Sorry.
For all I know, she could be my great-great-great-great-grandmother.
She does have your legs.
Have you ever been to Southern California, Chakotay?
No.
After the Hermosa quake in 2047, this entire region sank under 200 meters of water. It became one of the world's largest coral reefs, home to thousands of different marine species.
Some interesting species in this century.
Because for all that they've seen, I mean, this culture is about as alien as they get. You know what I mean? Like, there's people everywhere. They're walking around in bikinis. They're skateboarding. I mean, there's the guy on the stilts advertising the psychic hotline. I mean, there's so much going on there. And you get that wonderful line from Tuvok. We could have worn our Starfleet uniforms. I doubt anybody would have noticed. I mean, that just sums it up right there. And that's such a great moment. I just love watching them take it in, like, wow. These are our ancestors.
So that's your moment in the episode. Is it when they first land and they're just walking around like, oh my God.
I know. And there's so many good moments in Future Zen, but ultimately this is the one that I went with just because I laugh every time I watch it.
I'm so glad that you picked that moment because the episode that I was talking about at the beginning of the show and that I was talking about with you earlier, where like Future Zen and Future Zen Part 2 have so many great moments that are funny, are action-oriented, and have a struggle. And it has so many great moments that I want to include, and I couldn't pick any of them. And so I just had to let go of the episode, and I was like, Char will take care of it. Char will handle Future's End, and it'll be okay, and I'll feel good about myself. And on top of that, you did pick the best moment, I think the most iconic moment, because that is like the moment where we're soaking it in with them. And you're just like, you know what? We are kind of silly. We are kind of crazy in 1996.
It was a very interesting time. I loved growing up and coming of age in that era just because so much of anything goes was the mantra of that decade, truly. Yeah. And I'm glad I came through for you, buddy.
You came through with flying colors, so thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Future's End. It's such a great episode. You know the other episode that I had to just drop, like you did with Future's End? I really wanted to put something in from Q and the Gray. But what I realized was it was quotes that I was going for in that episode, not moments.
I think you're right. I mean, and sometimes those can be interchangeable where like you could have a quote that defines a great moment. But with the Q and the Gray, it was really just a collection of one-liners, not so much the moments that made it special, but just the words that were said.
Exactly.
If that makes sense.
So that's why I had to drop that one. And it's kind of interesting that we had a similar struggle. Yeah, good times. Well, bring it on home, Tristan, and give us your last pick.
Well, my last pick, this was the biggest struggle because I was trying to think, I was like, what is a great moment to kind of end this list? What really hits it home? You know, like, could it be something funny? Could it be something epic? Could it be something, you know, that's a great for the ship overall or great for a character? And I really, really struggled. But what I landed on was something from Basics Part 2. And so I was like, why not end this list with the beginning of the season? And that is Suter's death.
Ooh. Good pick.
The reason why I chose this is because redemption is a big theme for me. I love the theme of redemption in TV, in movies, in literature. I just absolutely love it. And it's something that stuck with me ever since I was a little kid. And also being a religious person, redemption is a big thing to me. And so when we see this character from the beginning, we're just like, oh, this is a psychopath. He's a sociopath. He's a murderer. And he's just going to be locked up. But they don't do that. They don't just lock away, like, they don't lock him up and throw away the key. They don't forget about him. They try to legitimately rehabilitate him. Not the bullshit that we deal with today where we lock someone up and say, like, oh, we're rehabilitating them in prison. No, we're just locking them away, removing them from society. Tuvok and crew and Janeway and everything like that, they genuinely had an investment in this person. Like, he murdered someone. He deserved to be punished for his crimes. But
yeah, no doubt.
They didn't give up on him. And so because of everything that they did, Tuvok's mind meld, you know, Janeway's insistence on letting him do new projects and helping out with the ship and everything like that. Maybe not her insistence is the wrong word, but you get what I'm saying.
Yes.
All culminated to this moment, and I'm droning on for a long time, but it's just, he could have been a throwaway character, but he wasn't. And they could have made his death meaningless, but they didn't. He rose up to the occasion. He saved everyone. He may have murdered one person, which is not something that can be forgotten or necessarily forgiven that quickly, but he did save everybody else. And so there was maybe not total redemption, but at least partially. And I think that's a great way to sign off a character.
Oh, totally. For as brief as we saw him, too, we saw a lot happen to this guy, from being a senseless killer to the fact that he had to kill again in Basics 2, and it just breaks him down. Mm-hmm. It's really, he really can't live with himself knowing that he's done it again. He's just, what is all that work that I've been doing for? I've ruined it. And the doctor has to kind of, you know, pull him back from the ledge. And that's really awesome. And then, yes, he comes through and he ultimately, in his death, helps save the whole ship. And what could he have done better than that?
Exactly.
So it's a great, although albeit brief, story arc. It's very well done by Brad Dourif, who's a fantastic actor.
Completely agree.
All right. Well, season 3 moments aren't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It's not an overstatement, and you had said in your introduction that without him and his hand guiding all of this, then it's unlikely that 2 would have been what it was, and if it had not been successful, then it probably would have meant the end of Star Trek at that point.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Martaban to, like, walk around the corner and be like, Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Risa 5!
The shuttlecraft.
The orb.
Curzon is involved with the Khitomer Quartz. Spock is at Khitomer when those are being talked about, so you would think they would have run into each other.
They probably hung out in the bar together.
To the journey!
One guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out! Now!
The Ready Room.
The movie series would not have relaunched and become what it was if not for the amazing bounce of The Wrath of Khan. The Wrath of Khan was to Star Trek the same thing that The Best of Both Worlds was to Next Generation.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, I've always liked I like that episode for, I mean, it's one of the most derided of the original series episodes, but yet I always, it has a place in my heart for some reason. I've always enjoyed watching it over. So I wanted to do something with those guys, the Scalbians.
The 602 Club. Like, I could kind of dismiss Droids in Distress and Fight or Flight and everything like that, and I was just kind of watching the background, but all of a sudden I started catching myself, like, stopping working and just focusing on watching, and so it just got better and better and better, and I think I was hooked by episode 4, Breaking Ranks. That's when I was like, okay, I like this show, this is good. Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Let's check out all of our shows. We are available wherever you can get your podcasts, in any which way. And none of them are possible without the help of our sponsors. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, if you yourself would like to help us out on Trek FM, please consider becoming a patron on Patreon. That is patreon.com/trekfm, and we have 3 associate producers to thank, and that is Lisa Stevens, Kenneth Tripp, and Jamie Deuce. So thanks, guys, for helping us out. You can follow Lisa on Twitter at Flip18, so give her a follow. Let her know that she's awesome for supporting To the Journey and Trek FM. And if you are yourself not a subscriber, please consider doing so. It helps us out vastly, and we appreciate it very much. Now, on to next week. What are we doing?
next week, I'm really excited about it because we talk about this episode all the time. We love this episode. It's funny. It's interesting. It has some great action. And it's just such a great episode. And I cannot believe that we haven't done this before, but we're doing another episode commentary, which we know you guys like. And it is on Message in a Bottle.
Oh, that's going to be great fun. It's such an entertaining episode. It's the one thing I like with Andy Dick in it. And so this should be a great grand old time.
I think so, too. And I completely agree with you. It makes me tolerate Andy Dick, if not actually enjoy his performance. And it's a great Doctor episode. He gets thrown into the Alpha Quadrant. We get to see the Prometheus. It's just all around great fun. But you'll have to tune in next week to hear us. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!